Let's take a look at the sixth and seventh step. I've done the review. I'm clear. I'm truly willing now to set right the wrongs. I'm ready to be changed. I'm going to make a conscious commitment to be changed. This is the step that says this step separates the men from the boys. It's because this is the departure point. There's some keys here for me. I've done the review, and if I can answer to my own satisfaction, over on page 76. We have emphasized willingness as being indispensable. Without the willingness to change, I will not change. The instant I am willing, I have already changed. It's indispensable. It must be there. One of the nice things about writing inventory this way, it shows me how reprehensible I really am. I just don't want to be that way anymore. I thought when I felt guilty and shamed at my behavior that I felt bad. When I found out why I was doing that, I really felt bad. Because that's petty. It's just petty bullshit. And I don't want to be that way anymore. Are we now ready to let God remove from us all the things we have admitted are objectionable? I believe that's the pivot word. Objectionable. I must personally object to being the way I am or I won't change. You can't beat me and make me change. You can't threaten me and make me change. You can't give me great rewards and make me change. All change is my behavior, as long as you're watching. I only change when I personally object to being the way I am. And the instant that happens, I have already changed. Then I go, and if there's something I'm going to hang on to, it says here, I ask God for the willingness to let it go. I pray until it comes. Then we have the end of the third step prayer. We call it the seventh step prayer. It's just the end of the third step prayer for me. My Creator, I'm willing now that you should have all of me, good and bad. I made you this offering earlier before. Now I'm clear as to what you're getting. Take this package if you want something to work with. Do whatever you want with it. I pray you now remove from me every single defective character which stands in the way of my usefulness to you and my fellows. I don't even get to pick the ones that are going to go. Whatever he thinks is going to be useful. Sometimes things hang around because I'm far more useful being an asshole than I am being a saint. And as they go, I can be of great use along the way because some people say, man, I don't want that. I don't know. Grant me strength as I go out from here to do your bidding. Amen. That's always my basic prayer. Grant me the strength. There was a time along the way when I would pray for relief, and I would get it, but that's all I would get. And relief's like aspirin. It's wonderful. It gives you relief, and then it wears off. And you got to take some more, and then it wears off, and you got to take some more. I found out that if I prayed to get the strength to finish whatever has to be finished here, that I never have to do it again. Give me the strength to do his bidding. Give me the strength. I quit smoking that way. It was no big deal. I couldn't stop. I didn't want to smoke anymore, and I couldn't stop. I tried writing inventory on it. It was a waste of time. Because this thing doesn't work as long as you're doing whatever it is you're doing. You have to stop doing what you're doing first. Then it goes to work. Eventually I got sick and tired of all that and just prayed. God, I would like to stop this, I said. And I think you'd like to have me stop it too. But I don't have what it's going to take. So please grant me the strength to get through whatever I need to get through so I don't ever have to do this again. And I had five of the worst days I have ever had in my life. I got no relief whatsoever. All I got was strength. I don't want to ever do that again. I'm just too old. That's worked in every other area of my life. Give me the strength to do the right thing. See, I know what the right thing is. This damn process will give you a conscience. Oh, will it? Now give me the strength to do the right thing. Great prayer. Smokers are getting nervous.
Letters are getting there.
10 minutes, 5 minutes, go home, what's your pleasure?
Yeah. 10 minutes.
10? Okay. Good job. Sit and run your mouth is so easy. Well, it is. Tell you what I want to do. Inasmuch as we're not meeting again in the morning, and we've covered a lot of ground, I'm amazed at how much we have covered. We got a half hour, 45 minutes, at the most an hour. What would you like addressed? Where do you want to go from here? What do you want me to share? Huh? Messengers, huh? Yeah. Well, we kind of stopped at 6 and 7. The rest of them, okay, because messengers is part of that. Yeah, okay. I got free at the 8th step, locked up in a penitentiary cell, completely free. Like I told you about it last night. My sponsor had given me the exercise. He said, you know what you did to these people? That you're so insensitive, you have no idea what it did to them. So what I want you to do is go back to that cell tonight and take all the people from this inventory list and make a separate list. Then add anybody you can think of, because if you met them, you messed with them, to get the right attitude. He said, then I want you to separate each one separately. Picture them in your mind and see if you can feel willingness to look each one right in the eye and say to them, I have been wrong and I have harmed you. Would you please tell me what I have to do so we can get the books to balance? And in that exercise that evening, as I went over the list and realized I really am willing to do that with everybody, the experience was, it felt as if I had been lifted up off of that seat. Nothing was lifted from me. I was lifted up and out. And I had a sense of freedom, and I've been free ever since. Now, they kept me another 8 months. It didn't make any difference. I was free. Made what amends I could from in there. Some things you can write letters to. Some you need to go see. My sponsor, in his cruelty, had me separate them out according to who I thought I could go see and who I could take care of by mail. And most of the time I was wrong. A couple of them were kind of interesting. On the 24th of December that year, we got the tree for $1. And went down to the drugstore where I had been writing my own prescriptions and got some Christmas tree lights for $1.50, $1.25, I don't remember exactly, it was right in there. On credit, I didn't have any money. We got those cowboy boots and the shirt for the boys from the public merchandise mart on credit because the welfare check hadn't gotten there. And then I got arrested on the 26th, so none of those got paid. And he seemed to think I could take care of the Christmas tree light by mail. And if the boots and shirt had to be done in person. So I got to write a letter to the drugstore. I owed $1.50 to tell them who I was, what I was, what I had done to them. And I made 10 cents a day on my job in the dish room and acknowledged the debt and asked them, because I had to take all my own toiletries and things out of that 10 cents a day, Would they accept a quarter a month until I got it paid off? And that's really humiliating. Yeah. And I said, yeah. I had them withdraw a quarter. Probably took 8-9 cents in postage at that time to get it done. Didn't matter. That's what we do. Christmas tree light thing was wonderful. See, I've been taught before I make any amends, once I'm clear on what they are, and I need to be clear on what I've done and what I think I should do to square it away, I also need to be clear that I do need to listen to the people if there's more than I'm aware of, so that I can really get it clear. If they need to browbeat me for an hour or two over the incident, okay, you got one shot at me. You don't get to browbeat me over nothing. Or if I've forgotten, so whatever, I just need, what do I have to do to get it straight? And what that did for me was make me a listener. See, when you ask somebody that, in whatever words you use, what do I have to do? All you have to do is shut up then and listen while they tell you. And almost everybody, without exception, will tell you precisely what you have to do to square away any harm you've done to them. Anyway, I told you about that little truck job I got with Dixon Paper. It turns out that I am now delivering paper sacks every other week to the place where I got the cowboy boots and the shirt on credit. But I was taught that while I'm trying to put my life in order and making these amends, that is not an end in itself. My real purpose is to fit myself to be a maximum service to God and those about me. So before I make an amends, now that I'm willing to make them all, I am to pray first about when and how. So every 2 weeks I'd pull up out in front of the place. I owed him $10.95. Is this today? And I'd carry the sacks in and I'd wait. Because I got to tell you something. Once you start having conversations with God, you develop a sense. And you hear things, not voices, but you hear things. Well, sometimes voices. I sometimes hear this sound, Don. It's exactly what it sounds like. And I really listen. That's my grandpa's voice, Don. Because God uses what's at hand to get my attention. And I recognize Grandpa. But that's another story. Is this the day? And I'd go in and we'd deliver the sacks and he'd sign the thing off. And I never had that feeling. It was 2 or 3 months down the road. And I got a job now. I'm making the money. I've got the money in my pocket. I'm ready. Is this the day? And we went in and delivered the sacks. And while he's signing the invoice, it came over me. This is the day. And I thought that was a little strange because he was really busy. The store was full. He was running around. It was a busy, busy, busy time. And I asked him if I could have a minute or two. That I really needed to talk to him. And I told him I was an alcoholic. I told him what had happened. And I told him that my very life depended on my getting square with him and everybody that I had messed with. And I watched this kind, kind man stop his very busy thing to listen to me because I had said it was my life. I told him what had happened. Told him I needed to make amends for that. And I had the money in my pocket. And I saw that glazed look that comes over people's faces when they don't know what the hell you're talking about. He got down on his hands and knees under one of his counters and pulled out some shoeboxes full of old receipts and started going through them, pretending he was going to find my bill. And I knew he was pretending. But I told him my life was at stake. A couple minutes of that, and he stood up and he said, "Well, kid, it looks like we wrote that off. So can you." And I saw a thing happen for him, and I don't know what it was. I think if I knew what it was, I'd probably take credit for it. But I became fully aware that for whatever the reason, he needed me that day. He needed to do that for me that day, for whatever the reason. So once again, God can use me as a messenger, as an example. So I used to go by every Christmas and let the guy know my progress. And 2 years ago I went, and he was dead. He'd gone. So I talked to his son, and I told his son the story. And watched the kid beam. He said, "That's the kind of man my dad was." And just what happened for him, again, was an example of if we'll do this right in God's hands, it can become very useful. And we don't even know how. Okay. The big book's very clear on a couple things. I'm to address, when I've done something wrong, I need to get it taken care of right away, if possible. Some things take time. Some people can't be found right away. Some people do not want to see me right away. I still got one of those. Every time I put the word on the street, the word comes back, "You keep that crazy son of a bitch away from me." Then won't ever see me. I'm willing. But until he wants to see me, I'm not pushing it either. It's not right. God, my financial amends have been a riot. I never got to make them the way I want to make them. If I owe you $100, wait a little bit while I save up $100 and I'll give it to you. And of course, it never happens. At 85, I find something I need desperately, and we're back to 50. Now, the dimensions of my wrongdoing, and remember, I'm talking chicken shit stuff here. That's what most of it is. And getting square with my dad, one day I was just visiting him, because that's one of the ways I make amends. Go visit with your people. Don't have to be a big crisis, for God's sake. Just go by and visit. Anyhow, I'm visiting with him, and he said, "You know, I need to have you do something for me, Don. I buy gas from old Mac up at the Texaco. And every time I go in, Mac says to me, 'When's Don going to come in and pay me the money he owes me?'" I hadn't even remembered that. It'd been so long, I'd burned Mac and skipped, and I had no idea. He says, "I'm just tired of listening to it. Will you straighten it up?" So I went right away and went up to see Mac. I owed Mac $75 in gasoline bills from 3 or 4 years before that. And I only had five. So I started my little litany. "Well, Mac, I really made a mess of my life." He says, "Yeah, you sure as hell did." "When do I get my money?" I said, "Oh, Mac, I've only got five." He said, "I'll take it." I said, "Tell you what I'd like to do. I've got a job now, and I'd like to set up a little plan." He said, "Don't give me that. You never kept your word in your life. Just whenever you get the urge, come by and give me some money." So for a while, that's what I did. I went by and took abuse from Mac every time. Until that was done. Finally got a job. I'm in a coat and tie. I'm the job developer for an agency that gets jobs for ex-cons. It's reasonably prestigious. And they call me up front one day to the desk, and here's this bum. Hadn't had a bath in some time, obviously living on the street. And as I listened and he told me who he was, this was a former landlord of mine from Overland Park, Kansas. When the kids and I were on the road, we'd skipped. We owed him $70, $80, $90, something like that. How he tracked me down, I don't know. Except I'm in the phone book now. And he wanted to know if I had any money. Because I owed him money. And I'm in bad shape here. I'm embarrassed. My co-workers are looking on while I'm looking good, and this bum is reminding me that I owe him money. I only had five, and I gave it to him. And I said, "I've got this job. Where can I reach you? Because on my next paycheck, I'd like to pay you off." He said, "I don't have a home. I'm living on the street." And he left. And for some period of time after that, every now and then, this guy would show up. And I'd never had more than $5 or $10. And I finally understood what God was doing here. On the days he showed up, he wouldn't eat unless I had $5 or $10 for him. So again, he took my wrongdoing from this place and used it to be of service at this time. And once the bill was paid, I've never seen the man again. But for a period of a time there, I was able to help him eat. So you never know. Stand willing. Show me how to do it. Don't make a run amok. I'm glad they kept me locked up when I was first ready, because I'd have screwed them all up. Mom just wants me to be happy, so I'll go by and show her I'm happy. And we've developed a really nice relationship over the years. Told you about my brother. It's 22 years getting that squared away. That's still really tentative. He likes me now. We get along fine. We understand each other, but it's going to be tentative forever. There's a piece of him that's never, ever going to trust me. And he shouldn't. Got things squared with both of my boys. It took some time. We talked about things. Chuck Chamberlain helped me immensely one time. He said, there's nothing we can do about what we did to our children. It's done. Can't change it. All we can do is create an arena where they have an opportunity to heal. And we call that home. So I began building a home. Got things squared with Sean and Terry both. With Terry, it was a matter of calling him one day and thanking him for taking care of Sean when I couldn't, because at 8 they'd been arrested with me. And Terry had to grow up to protect his little brother. He missed some time there. Took them all to Epcot one time. We've done a number of things over the years to get square. Currently, my youngest boy, Sean, he's in his 30s now, he and my grandson, who is 6'6", for God's sake, I was amazed at this kid. They come by. We're visiting. My older boy hasn't contacted me for 2 years. Talked to him just the other day. He's really pissed at something, and I have no idea what it is. Nor do I care, because it's not mine. I've done everything I can do and stand ready to do anything else that's necessary. And I've asked him, wrote him a letter the other day and asked him once more, you're pissed, just tell me what I have to do, what's wrong. And I'll wait for that. Cut me off from my three other grandchildren for 2 years. My little granddaughter, who's now 15, wrote me the other day. She's moved out, and she wants to stay in touch with us. She said her dad wouldn't let her. He forbid him to see us. What I've had to learn in circumstances like that is that I'm not to push that. Okay, I've done everything I can do. The door is open. I will continue to keep it open. He's got to get done whatever he's got to get done, and I'm not to tamper with it. I learned that with his younger brother when I kept rescuing him when he was early. I just kept rescuing him. And it hit me one day that what I thought was love was really not love, because every time I rescued him, he was in the middle of a life lesson. And I rescued him and pulled him out of it halfway through, and he didn't get to start halfway through. He had to go back and start all over again. And that was not love. So I had to put him on the street at 20 below zero one night. He said he hated me for that for a while, but he's come back since and thanked me because he got done what he had to get done. That's all part of this 8th and 9th and 10th step business. I'm to continue to watch for selfishness, self-centeredness, dishonesty, and fear, because they will crop up. And when they do, I'm going to go to God at once and make amends at once. They're not talking about tomorrow morning. If I screw up today, I need to do my best to clean it up today. And it's always so petty, it's ridiculous. What I was up to last year, it just makes me sick. Working in corrections, you get shot at a lot. Not by the inmates. Prison administrators are interesting people. The whole system is goofy. It's a dysfunctional family of the highest order. And things had happened, and I caught myself ally building again. You did this to me, so I get her as an ally, and I will gang up on you. And it took me about 2 weeks to catch that one, how destructive that really is. Instead of me helping you get your job done, I'm busy interfering with it which interferes with mine. Now I'm pissed at you. It was really, there's inventory on it. Do you do that? Yeah. Got to keep watching for it. If I feel hurt or threatened, I defend myself. Why should I feel hurt or threatened? Because I am what I am. And periodically it's too hot or too cold or, you know. But the test step goes beyond just me continuing to watch. I'm to commence this way of living while I make my amends. Now, the 10th step kind of encompasses all of the first nine for me, as far as I can tell in principle. Got to understand, I don't have the power to change anybody. All I can change is your feelings. Can't change you. Can't change me. How can I be of service? Those are attitudes that are supposed to go with me all the time. And I don't always want to do that, so I have to pray. I've got some exercises in here on the 10th and 11th step that are really very specific. I'm to check myself every night. Was I kind and loving toward all? Is my catch-all? I can sometimes answer the other questions, okay. I've never been able to answer that one, yes. Even if I didn't say anything to you, at least one of you on any given day was a son of a bitch. At least one. The guy that cut me off on the freeway, whatever it was, the waitress that doesn't even speak English trying to take my order at Arby's. I'd grouse and grumble about that and go home and complain to my wife. What a lovely thing to come in. God damn you. So, those are great questions. I'm sure you've read them. On page 80, he talks about, before taking drastic action, what might implicate other people, we secure their consent. Now, I was on federal parole and state parole when my memories began to come back, and I remembered that a previous Christmas in Cheyenne, Wyoming, when the kids and I were on the run, I had gotten some amphetamines with a prescription that I wrote, using a check that I wrote. It didn't have any bank backing at all. I'd committed two felonies, is what I'd done, on that run, and now that it came up, I had to do something about it. Once I remembered, I got to do something about it. So I went to my sponsor, and he said, well, your federal parole officer is going to be implicated. If they arrest you in Cheyenne, he's going to have to do something, so we ought to go talk to him. That's kind of scary for me to have to go talk to a parole officer and tell him, I'm facing 7 years in Wyoming if I go do this, but I got to go do this. What do you think? And he said, yeah, you do. You got to do something about it. I'll give you permission to leave the state, and I will not violate you if they arrest you. So go do it. And Gary said, now, it also says we don't want to be hasty and foolish martyrs and just throw ourselves into the lion's cage. He said, I know the guy. Because he grew up in Cheyenne. He said, let's write him a letter and ask him how he would like you to handle it. Go ahead and lay it all out for him. Then if he wants you to come up there, then we'll go up. Whatever he wants to have done, okay. And I wish I had a high drama answer for you. I don't, because the guy was dead. The shop was closed. The letter came back marked that way. So there's nothing I could do about it. Then we went back to the parole officer and said, don't I owe Wyoming some time? And he said, let me tell you what will happen if you go up there. You're going to confuse them. They don't have any record of this. The records are gone. The man's dead. He didn't make a formal complaint. You're just going to irritate them. Don't do it. Gary asked me in his presence, are you willing to do so if they ever ask you to? And I said, yeah. And they both said, good. Go back to work. You're starting to get your children back, your life back in order. Don't go mess with them because you'll just piss them off. Okay, I'll take their word for that. I still stand ready. I don't have to worry about it anymore. The statute of limitations is way past. But the essence of what I'm trying to tell you is I had complied here. And what happened to me spiritually can't be measured. Okay? I became aware I really am willing to go to any length to maintain this spiritual contact. If it means 7 more years in prison, take me. Whatever it means. And I haven't had to challenge that from that day. It's just it was so nice to know I really mean business. Y'all needed that, don't you? Mm-hmm. That makes me nervous. We just had more of that than we can stand. Is that it?
Wow.
Yeah, we had 3 inches in 1 hour the other day. It's still trickling. Oh, you jinxed it. I hope you get lots of rain. The principle that I was taught and that I live by is simple. If I harmed you, I owe you. Period. There is no slack. I get guys these days that come to me and say, well, I burned my drug dealer on a deal. Do I have to pay him back? Damn right. Let's don't play any games with that one. You welched on a business deal. You owe him that money.
I was wondering about that. I paid this guy back. It was a drug deal. Mm-hmm. Is this on tape? And I went to the sponsor, and he said, you shouldn't have done that. We don't pay back drug dealers. You should give it that way after. Pay back a drug dealer would just be enabling the drug market. That would be doing more harm than good.
I don't buy that. I welched on a business deal. I owe it. I don't give a damn what he does with it. So absolutely no consequence. Yeah. That's just the way I feel about it. Okay. I'll tell you about Jaime. You know about Jaime. This will curl your hair. Jaime's out of New York, and he used to be a wholesale heroin dealer for the mob. And he ripped him off. So when he got sober out in California, and it came time to do this, Jaime's got two things he's got to do in New York. He's got to go back to the mob and try to get that straight. And the New York authorities would also like to see him about all this. And after lots of prayer and looking at it and setting it all up, because you don't just dash off into it, Jaime came on back from L.A. to New York, and they didn't hear from him for 2 weeks. He went to the mob first, and nobody knew for sure what was going to happen. 2 weeks later, he called Joe and says, well, I'm in jail now. It seems that the mob kind of said, Jaime, this is too confusing. Okay. If you'll leave New York and never come back, we'll just kind of forget it. Now he's in jail, and the authorities, after a couple of weeks, give him essentially the same deal. Get the hell out of here, Jaime. It's just too much trouble. You didn't know that going in. If I owe you, I owe you. GW was a little crip out of the barrios and was able to identify and remember over 350 burglaries he had committed. At a time, knocking on the doors to each one of them to get it straight. And he got so spiritual, we lost him. It became useless. But if I harmed you, I owe you. What do I have to do? Half the time, I don't even remember who you are or what I did to you. All I need to do is stand willing with God's protection and care to square it. And I found over the years a real interesting thing. There's only one thing I really have to say to anybody. I was wrong. I don't get to say I was sorry. My sponsor said, you've been sorry your whole life. I don't ever hear it. I was wrong. I get to say that. And I'm an observer. Have you ever watched the people in a little group talking about the one that isn't there because they don't like him anymore? Almost invariably, what I hear is, if they could only admit they were wrong, I could forget about it. Well, that's true. If I'm willing to admit to you that I was wrong, the healing has begun. Because part of making amends is for me, because I owe you. But a larger part is that I need to give you an opportunity to get free too. I've put you in a place where you're carrying some resentment. You're going to be cut off too. I'm diminishing you. I need to give you an opportunity to get free. I didn't know that until I'd been doing it for a number of years. Yeah. There's another aspect of making amends that's purely selfish. I don't want to be blindsided. I really don't want to have to be afraid of anybody coming up on me with something, and I'm blindsided. I need to stand willing. Whatever you say I did, okay, if you say I did it, how do I square it? Be careful. I've got a pretty good memory. If you jog it just right, I will remember. And I don't humiliate myself for anyone. I'm one of God's people. We do not crawl before anybody. But I will make it right. And there's all kinds of examples in there. The essence of the 10th and 11th step and the 12th step, the essence for me, is about being on time. Where I work within 3 blocks is a place called Dario's. It's a place that's designed to take care of people who have severe garlic deficiencies. It's a little Italian restaurant. Okay. Yeah. And we usually walk up there and have lunch. Because it's good. Mama still cooks. And when she doesn't, she beats the cook till he gets it right. It's a big place. There are days when, because of the foot problem I've been left with, I don't walk too well. And I had one of the guys that was sponsoring come by, and we were going up to Dario's. And it's so good, there's never any place to park within 3 blocks. That's why we walk. But I really needed to drive that day. So we drove up, and as we pulled up to Dario's, the car right in front pulled out and left, and we had that spot. Now, I've come to expect that. He said, "Isn't that nice? God got us a parking spot." Bullshit. We were on time, that's all. Had we been 30 seconds earlier, that car wouldn't have come out yet and we'd have missed it. If we'd have been 30 seconds later, the guy in front of me would have gotten it. We were simply on time. 10th and 11th step keep me on time. There's only one time anything can ever happen. That's right now. If it has already happened, it isn't going to happen. It's the past. If it's going to happen, it hadn't happened yet. It's the future. It can only happen now. The only time I can be conscious of the presence of God is now. That's it. It gets so bloody simple. And the continuing inventory and the checking of myself and the prayer and the meditation keep me fully aware that now is the time. Tricky stuff, but very, very simple. The only time I can help you is now. The only time you can help me is now. If I have already helped you, it can't happen. If I'm going to help you, it hasn't happened. The only time is now. The prayer doesn't say, "God, I'm about to offer myself to thee to do with me." Okay. I am now ready. Now, now, now. Everything is now. Everything's immediate in the spiritual world. You want to tell somebody you love them? Do it. Get it done. You want to tell somebody you're pissed at them? Do it. Now. things that block me are aspects of self, self-pity, self-loathing, self-interest. As a result of some chronic health problems and chronic pain, I've learned some truly wonderful, wonderful things. There's pain and there's suffering. And I used to think they went together. Because they did for me. If I'm in pain, I'm going to share it. We're all going to suffer. Somewhere along the way, that has changed. There's pain and there's suffering, and they do not have to go together. Most suffering is caused by self-awareness. When I got the hepatitis and they put me on the interferon, a strange thing happened. The interferon cut me off from my feelings, from my emotions. It deadened me. For about 6 months, I couldn't feel anything. Things happened. The only sensation I had was pain, which was no big deal. I came off of the interferon, and all of a sudden, I felt everything all at once, all over again. And it was a baffling thing to me because it all felt like the same thing, terror. Then it began to sort out. What happens in the middle of pain is that I become aware of it. Pain causes pain. I become self-focused. And when I'm interested in self, I'm in pain. It's only when I'm interested in you that there's no pain. That's an experience that I've had. You're looking baffled. I understand. If a problem is very difficult, the book says, we throw ourselves harder into working with others, because it takes us out of ourselves. This way of life says that when I'm in real trouble, I'm not to go somewhere and get help. I'm to go somewhere and give help. That's how I walk on this path. There are other paths. That ain't this one. The way I overcome my problem is to help you overcome your problem. That's the easiest and the best way. It gets me out of myself. I got it pretty good. I get to feeling sorry for myself. The best thing in the world for me is to go find somebody that doesn't have it pretty good and help them get it better. I'm to practice these principles in all of my affairs. The 12th step says I'm to carry the message. That's easy. Now I've got to practice the principles in all of my affairs. That means, first of all, I'm going to have some affairs. I mean, to be real careful not to have more affairs than I have principles. I stole that because it sounds good. I like it. Now, what are some of the affairs that I have? I have a family, children, a wife, grandchildren. At one point, a dog, but the dog and I had some difficulties, so I won. When I went to North Carolina, I bought them a little brown lab, male brown lab, because there is absolutely nothing more vicious looking than a big lab laying at the top of the stairs looking down at you. It's a man-eater. It wouldn't hurt a fly. Okay. I came home 2 years later, and this dog thought it was his house, and these were his women. We had some difficulties. I started to put him out one day, and he just wasn't going to go. And he nipped me. Didn't bite me. He nipped me. And we found him another place to live. We didn't have time for him anyway, and that's the truth. Anyway, I have affairs. I'm to practice these principles at home. If I can't treat my children the same way I treat the people I sponsor, I'm living a lie. If I'm not willing to listen to them with the same closeness and care for attention, I'm living a lie. If I'm not going to give them the same time that I give AA, I'm living a lie. And it isn't the quantity of time, it's the quality of the time. When I'm here with you, I am all the way here with you. And when I'm home, I am all the way home. That's the only way I know how to do it. I practice the principles. Immediacy. Where are you? Then do what you're going to do there. When I'm at work, I am all the way at work. And what I'm beginning to realize what that means, because I'm only working 20 hours a week now. I can do my whole job in 20 hours a week. Most people in 40 hours are only doing 20 hours of the work anyway. So I just soon get mine compressed and go home. Get it done. Everything's immediate. I've learned about crisis. It doesn't have to be mine just because it's crisis. And quite often, if it's a crisis today, it'll still be a crisis tomorrow. I don't have to do anything immediate about it. I'm to practice the principles. If I'm agitated or doubtful, I'm to pause and wait for an answer. What is my contribution to be? Sometimes it's to let the chaos go. I found out along the way that without chaos, I don't have any idea what needs to be put in order. So I love chaos. I love to watch it. I don't like to stir it anymore. But out of the chaos, I can see what needs to be put in order. And I learn what's mine and what isn't mine. You know, most of the problems that I run into are none of my business. I learn that through the practice of the principles in all of my affairs. One of the affairs I have is how I relate to my neighbor. Very important affair. I live in a neighborhood with neighbors. Now, I like hedges. I have privet hedges around my house. I come from the old country. My grandpa taught me good fences make good neighbors. Okay. And there's nothing better for a hedge than a hedge to make a good fence. Nothing gets through except snakes. But I live in a neighborhood with civilized people. And it occurred to me one day while I'm putting the hedge in on my side of the property, one whole side of that hedge is facing his side of the property. He'll look out his window and see my hedge. Maybe I ought to consult with him and ask him how high he would like it and how he'd like that trimmed. And in that talk, he says, oh, I think the hedge would be fine, just however you want to trim it. But leave a spot about this wide between the hedge and the edge of the house so there's a way between your house and mine. Because when you're gone, I watch your house. And when I'm gone, I'd like you to watch my house. And this gives us access. Hell, I'd never thought about that. That's one of my affairs. How do I communicate with my neighbor? He and I don't have a lot of common interests, but we have one interest in real common. We like our neighborhood clean and clear and safe. His kid grew marijuana in my black yard one time. I mean, the kid probably figured, I'm too old to know what that is. I did not tell his dad. Why would I want to do that? I pulled it up because it was on my ground. Okay. And he noticed it was gone. We had a black lab at the time. He asked me, Mr. Prince, do you suppose if I jumped the fence that dog would hurt me? I said, no, he would eat you. I just kind of let it go at that. We had a meeting in my backyard one time. We do that once a year. People come over, we had a big potluck and a big meeting. The next day he took me aside and he said, you seem to know something about alcoholism. He said, me and my friend, some of us have a problem. You suppose we could talk to you? I don't put my trash on the street Monday because they don't pick it up till Tuesday. I take it down Tuesday morning. That's one of the affairs that happens in a neighborhood. I don't want my trash all over the street all night because there's cats running loose in the neighborhood. And the next thing I know, it's a mess. I learned from my neighbor one time, we have a funny phenomenon in Colorado in the winter, or in the early spring. We'll get a heavy, wet snow. And then the sun comes out the next day and it starts to melt. And that night it freezes. And what you got is water that deep. It freezes into ice. And it makes dams of ice. And the gutters fill up. It's a mess. And I was in the house getting ready to go to work grousing because the city hadn't come by to clean those gutters out yet. And I hear this noise out front. Chunk, chunk, chunk. And I looked out and there was my neighbor with a big ice thing chopping the ice out of the gutter. It's just a big flat. So I got my little shovel out and went out and joined him. Started cleaning the gutters and we visited during the morning. Had a good time. I learned all kinds of things about him and his life. And he learned some about mine. And we got our gutters cleaned. Okay. It's not the city's job. It's mine. And my kids watch all this. I am so proud of my kids, particularly my two stepdaughters. They're really my daughters. They watch how we live in our house. If I sponsor you, I expect you to come to my house early in the morning because I want you to see how a recovered alcoholic and his family live. That's part of my message. It's not all words. How do you carry this out when you got two teenage kids getting ready for school, wife getting ready for work, and me getting ready for work? What's the house like? Kind of chaotic. So we sit in the living room and you watch the show go on while we do our step work. And one day we got a great lesson. My daughter come down the stairs. She's about 13 at the time. She says, excuse me. This is my mouthy one. I raised an advocate. Excuse me, she says. And it shocked me. You don't interrupt us when we're busy doing God's work. What do you want? She says, I live here too, you know, and you've never introduced me to this person. Oh, she was right. So I introduced him, and she, well, nice to meet you, and she's gone. That's all she wanted. My daughter's real father is a Denver detective, vice squad. He's got some really interesting ideas and viewpoints on life. I sponsor a number of gay people because I sponsor alcoholics, and I don't care whether you're male, female, or mixed. I don't care. And one of my gay guys was there working with me, and that same daughter came down the stairs, and I knew she'd been with her dad for a weekend, and she's making really ugly noises about gay people. I can hear him. And Sam's watching me to see what I'm going to do here. We're talking about living by principles. I'm not fighting anyone or anything. And I said, Kelly, something you need to know. She says, what's that, Dan? I said, some of the people that you love the very most are gay. Because she really adores Sam. And she said, oh, who? I said, I'm not going to tell you. You figure it out. And let it go. Within a week, she had come back to me and she said, it's just not worth the effort. Just not worth the effort to figure out who. That's practicing the principles as I understand them. I'm not to try to warp her mind nor to protect Sam, but I'm going to certainly say, get this straight. She still doesn't know about Sam. She still loves him. Sam's done so much good for alcoholics, it's just amazing. Denver AA produces missionaries. I don't know if you knew that. You come to Denver, go through the steps, and the first thing you know, you're somewhere else starting your own little group in the midst of AA people who don't want to hear about it. Old-fashioned 12-step work was fun and very dangerous. I've had guns pulled on me. I made the mistake of going on a call one night by myself. Got to the door and he opened the door and he's got a gun in his hand. He's changed his mind. He doesn't want to quit. Okay. That's fine with me. Good night. Three of us one time, my sponsor and another fellow and I, during our evangelistic period, we were at the state convention and a call came in there. And we took the call. Guy in a motel. We went out. We're all in our suits looking good. We gave him an hour and a half of the best 12-stepping you've ever heard. I just stayed sober on it. It was incredible. And then he looked up at us and said, "Man, it's clear to me you guys really have your shit together. But I need a drink." So, out of four alcoholics on a 12-step call, three of the four stayed sober and went back to the convention. Because that's the way it works. Yeah. My job is just to carry the message. And in doing that, I get to stay sober. And if he does too, that's a bonus. If not, it doesn't really matter. We got a shot at him. Somewhere down the way, maybe somebody else will get a shot at him. I really appreciate you allowing me to come out. This wears me out. I go through numerous kinds of internal hell with this because I know I'm doing the job and I'm doing it right. I also am concerned that I must bore you all to death after a while. I wouldn't sit and listen to me this long. Okay. But I appreciate you. I need desperately to tell people about what happened to me when God became fully alive in me. And in my regular life, going to work, raising kids, getting nipped by the dog, cutting ice with the neighbor, getting to go to Russia and talk to them about AA, whatever that may be, is all part of that same package. It's just God's here, let's go do it. You may be eating pancakes tomorrow and borscht the next day. It doesn't make any difference. I came here desperate because I needed to die and couldn't die. The state I'm in tonight because of you is that I'm truly willing to stick around for as long as need be. I have plans that I'd like to carry out that are beyond my projected life. I'm not going to get done all the stuff I want to get done. And that's okay. I'm going to take a crack at it. You have enriched my life. See, I will go back home now and tell the folks about you. I really will. They'll know all about you. Your family. You, those of you who've been to Fellowship of the Spirit know what I'm talking about. They're just waiting on you. And they'll know who you are because it's all a common deal we have going on. My wife will really appreciate you. When I do one of these spiritual weekends, I go home horny. She really likes that. Well,
Terrible.
We're done, and yet this thing is undone. It can never be done. We just need to keep getting together with each other, and that's what the fellowship is about. Just kind of getting together and learning how to visit. Last time I was here, I got to stay with Alex. We had a great time. He taught me more than you can imagine about life. I just love him to pieces. Keep staying in touch with him. In fact, I get to come back out for their wedding. What a great deal that's going to be. That's if I'm approved. So anyhow, it's time to go home. Thank you very much for having me come out. I hope to see you over the road. Remember, Fellowship of the Spirit, both in Colorado and up in Maine in March. It's a little 4-day deal. Starts on a Thursday. There's a speaker on Thursday. And there's a speaker on Friday night. It'll be in Al-Anon. And there's two speakers on Saturday, and there's one on Sunday, and there's 10 big book workshops. And the rest of the time, it's just getting together. It's a family deal. Bring the kids. It's just basic old AA. And they're setting it up so the folks on this coast can have what we've had for 7 years in Colorado, just a weekend to gather together and have a lot of fun. Potluck on Friday. Everybody from different parts of the country bring whatever your favorite food is. It's a good time. You'll get flyers on it. So, that's all I got.